Wake up call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, coming up this hour, we've got the good, the bad, the dumb. We've got Jared Dubin joining us. We will talk to him about the NFL in the weekend. Again, small weekend given that six teams were on a bye week. But we're also going to get into the college football because a funny thing happened on the way to Saturday's games. We had talked later last week, I think it was on Friday to be exact, about the games coming up this weekend and looking at the college football committee rankings and where they stood. And at the time, there were a lot of questions as to where, you know, certain teams like TCU, for example, were going to find their way into a playoff with Alabama above them with one loss. Michigan and Ohio State are going to play. Tennessee and Georgia were going to play. So we kind of knew that those things were going to start to work out. But again, a funny thing happened on the way to where we are now, in that Alabama lost, Tennessee is now lost, and now all of a sudden there is opening up a possibility that we could see a non-conference winning one-loss team make the playoff. You could look at Ohio State and Michigan, and this is what I was targeting for a long time this year. Those two schools playing as good football as they are, meeting up at the end of the season. One of them is going to win and go on to the Big Ten championship, and the other one is going to have one loss, and they're going to sit back and look at everything from afar. Now, that can hurt you a lot of times, but it also can help you. It means you don't run into another landmine. If Ohio State should win that game in the championship game and be undefeated, and the only Michigan loss is to that Ohio State team, Michigan is in the running for this. Tennessee, likewise, could be in the similar situation. If in the end the Vols run the table, they're not going to Atlanta because Georgia now has basically a two-game lead on them, one in the standings and one head-to-head. Tennessee could find themselves with the only loss on the road to what is going to be now the number one team in the country. TCU now finds itself in a position of win out and you get in. Lose a game, you still might, although there are a lot of good teams ahead of you. Oregon, same situation. Only loss to a number one Georgia team, win out in your end. It opens up the door to a lot more conversation. It's funny how college football works that way. I don't necessarily need 16 teams to be in this thing. I need more than four, but I don't need a blow up, fill in the bracket type of tournament to handle all the good teams in college football. Because to be honest with you, while there seems to be a lot, in the end, there isn't that many. And we will see how it all plays out as we go.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb. It is the Monday edition. Hope you all had a great weekend. Is the weekend good? Well, what's the good of the day?
The good of the day is that if you had plans on retiring Saturday,
yes.
On Saturday, you know what? Your retirement plans are still in effect. Because you are still just six numbers away from the largest jackpot in Powerball history.
Yeah.
So I did not. I was six numbers away on Saturday. So my retirement plans are still in effect.
I think my wife told us we won two tickets.
Nice. There you go.
We won two tickets to the next drawing. She bought like 10, I think.
Yeah. All right.
I don't know. So
I, know. I feel like so I need to end up my
thing.
Game.
Somebody is going to win this. Now, probably there's going to be probably multiple people when this thing finally lands. Maybe with multiple people. But somebody's going to win this.
Somebody's going to win it.
What's it, $1.6 billion
now? No, right now it's $1.9.
Almost $2 billion in a lottery?
And so you figure after the government gets their cut, you're looking at when you're possibly taking home about $1 billion. I don't know what the payout actually is. I got to figure that out. But you're taking $1 billion home.
I know the stock market isn't doing all that great. I get it. But there was a guy on the radio making the pitch to take the annual installments. I'm like, don't take the annual installments. Take the money and invest. You'll make more on the investments than you will be on the annual
installments. Take the lump sum.
Take the lump sum. Always take the lump sum. But I don't know. Does that change with the more money? Like they just go, well, when it reaches a certain point, you are better off taking the.
Well, but put it this way, right? Saturday's jackpot was $1.6 billion, right? Nobody won it. The lump sum amount you probably could live off of, which is $782.4 million.
Right.
I think I could find a way to do something with that.
Yes. But if you're also, like, okay, but at the same time, let's not, you know, I think that the problem isn't, of the $1 point something billion, 1.6, like, you've won that.
Right.
Right. Like, you, that's what you've won. Now, you got to pay taxes on it. But the question is, it becomes like a mental game of, like, how much of my winnings do I get? It's not like, well, my lump sum, because when you take a lump sum, you're giving some, a lot of that back.
Mm-hmm.
As like you're giving it to the lottery people, like some people are like, no, heck no, I don't care if it's millions I'll never spend or it's million whatever, I don't care, it's mine, it's not yours, you don't get it just because I'm taking the lump sum, it's mine, so I'll take the annual installments because I want to get as much of this as possible. So that's where the thought process comes, is, you know.
But I need cash now. I need to lump sum.
But you can live off the annual payments.
I know.
No. So they said you make like $20 million a year for like the next whatever. But I think the smart thing is because you could put that money, the lump sum, majority of it in investments and make more than – because the money that you're getting, inflation, everything, like it stays the same. So it's always amazing to me, like when I watch, I see ads, and I'm always watching like old retro ads, and they're like, the Atari 2600, only $239 at your local Sears store. And you find out later that that's like $600 in like today's money.
Right.
And you think, oh my God, my parents must have gone broke getting me that Atari 2600.
Well, I mean, think about it. It's like PlayStation 5.
Right. Right.
I mean, that's the equivalent. Atari 2600 back in the day is PlayStation 5 today.
So 20 years from now, when they're giving you that last lump segment, you're like, oh, great. I'll go. I guess I'll go buy groceries this week.
Exactly.
Right? Like, you know
what I
mean?
Fill up the tank. Can't believe we're still using fossil fuels.
Michael, who's always good with accounting, he says that after the lump sum and the taxes, the actual amount you put into the bank is about 30%, 38% of the total. So
wow.
Yeah, so you know, you can see why people are like, well, I want almost all of it. I know I'm paying the taxes. You're not paying the taxes for me. I'm paying the taxes, but
so
I want all of that 1.6
out of the
billion
dollars. You're still taking around $300 to $400 million.
Yeah.
You know what you could do with that? You can buy. You can purchase a English lower tier soccer team.
Sure, you can. Sure, you can. You can do all sorts of stuff with it.
Well, would you be part of an investment group all of a sudden, like for the Commanders?
I guess I would. I would call RG3.
Could you, like, yeah. You know, just say, hey, like, man, I got some cash to burn.
Yeah.
Can I get in on this?
So
I'm a silent partner. I know this is
a tangent.
Just want to be an owner.
I probably should be bringing it up at another point, but I got a question for you. I was thinking about this with Dan Snyder. Because remember we were talking about Dan Snyder being rich,
yeah.
But nobody likes him? Right? Like, nobody likes him. I know he's probably got personal friends. But he's not accepted
Does
in any
he?
Circles. I don't know. I don't think anybody likes him.
Yeah.
I've never seen anybody say nice things about him publicly. So maybe he's got some like group of friends that leech off of him. I don't know. But I was thinking about this because I have a friend of mine that traveled the world. He's single and he does voice tracking for a number of radio stations. So he just takes it with him in a laptop and he just travels the world. And they put the money in his account and he just buys cheap flights. And he goes, I think I'm going to go to Brazil or I think I'm going to go to Japan or he just travels the world. And he told me that he met a guy in one of the South American countries. I want to say Brazil, but I'm not 100% sure. But he met a guy who was traveling. He met a guy and the guy worked at a local bottling plant. And he said, or something. And he said the guy just rode his bike to work every day. He didn't live in a neighborhood, small house. And the guy was one of the happiest guys he ever met. He goes, he would go home. Somebody would be making a big stew or something. They'd all eat. They'd watch the soccer game on some little TV. And they'd laugh until the night came. And then they'd all go to sleep. And they'd all wake up. And he'd bike to the plant again. And he goes, he was so happy. He didn't have much, but he had all this community. Would you rather live like that or be a billionaire on a yacht by yourself with no friends?
Yeah.
Like, it's like the big philosophical question. Because he said, like, that guy changed his, like, perspective on things. The guy just, he didn't have a care in the world. He's just like, nope, I work, I eat, I hang out with my friends, we laugh, we watch soccer, and this is my life. I was like, it's pretty simplistic. Or the complexities of being a billionaire on a yacht because you're trying to, like, not come back to the country to testify in a thing about that you're involved in, and everybody hates you and wants you to sell the product you own. Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to get philosophical on a Monday morning during the Good, the Bad, and the Dumb. So if you win the lottery, that's a question some of you can answer for me. right, what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day. You had mentioned it earlier, but Philadelphia has the dubious distinction of now becoming the first city ever to lose two championships in one day.
Yeah. Question about that. Has MLS and the MLS Cup now risen to a point where that is part of the four sport championship equation?
It's a great question. I would say yes.
I think it has.
Because if you told me that hockey was going on right now, I wouldn't even know.
Yeah, but you're a soccer fan. But that's,
I know.
You're
I'm different. I'm probably a little biased.
You're a little biased. There are a lot of hockey fans out there who can absolutely, and you live in Houston that doesn't have an NHL team. But I can tell you, like, even in Nashville, they know the Predators are struggling. So, but, and you're a soccer fan. But I think it is. I am definitely not seeing 4A and 4B. I am not seeing empty MLS stadiums and people going, look at this. This is unbelievable.
No, in fact, that final was a sellout.
I mean, it was a sellout.
It was a packed crowd. But they played in the right spot. They put it in L.A. So they know what they're doing.
But hold on.
They were at the Chargers' old home stadium, Tony.
But you're again, I'm not talking about L.A. Austin is selling out. Atlanta, they're filling up the dome
when they play. Cincinnati
is, and Nashville SC is the one of the hottest tickets in our town because it's such a party environment. These games are selling out everywhere, and I think FC, we're on the verge of that.
Tony, you may not know this. Miami FC sold out their season, and they haven't even played a game yet.
Yeah. People want to be a part of this.
They did. No, but the final itself, the MLS Cup final, was one of the crazier finals because LAFC led for most of the game. Then Philadelphia Union came back, scored two goals in the second half before LAFC added one more to tie it up. Went into extra time. Philadelphia Union, on a goal by Jack Elliott, seemed to have won the game. It was in the 120th minute plus stoppage time.
Oh.
Right? 120th minute. Which, wow, if you don't know anything about soccer, right, it goes 90 minutes long. And then now they used to do like golden goal or sudden death, but they do two extra 15-minute periods. So you go an extra 30 minutes. So it's like playing another
game. That right there is one of the problems that I have with soccer becoming part of the four-sport group, making it five-sports group.
Why?
Because the first thing you did was you said they won it in the 128th minute. In case you don't know, and we do not do that in the other sports.
It's true. So
you don't have to say they won it in the 11th inning. Now, in case you don't know, baseball is a 9-inning game. You get to bat, then I get to bat. You get to bat, then I get to bat. And if the score is tied, we go into more innings, and I get the last at-bat if I'm a home.
Maybe that's a force of habit. I don't know. Did you
know that? I'm hoping there is a point where
then we get to
to the point where you can say 120th minute, and most sports fans understand what that is. That's always going to be a problem in a sport if you have to explain what the rules are.
I agree.
And so hopefully that's why it's going to get to that point. Maybe it's down at the bottom.
Maybe it'll take another 10 years for that to happen.
Possibly.
I don't know.
But listen, man, in the last decade alone, it's been remarkable. Mm-hmm. It's always getting better. It's getting better and better and better. So I like it. I like it because when Major League Soccer in the United States has been tried in a number of different ways, and it has not caught on. And people said when MLS came to be 20-plus years ago, well, they're trying it again. All right, we'll see. And now it's got expansion teams, nice new stadiums that are fun. The party atmosphere is electric. And so I'm pulling for it. I have my heart. My heart is I was treated really well by the Rapids. In my year, I had 2 years of doing their pregame and postgame show at Station in Colorado. I didn't know a thing about soccer, and they treated me great. They really treated me great. So I have a soft spot in my heart for them. So what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day, now this isn't confirmed. We'll have to kind of wait and see. But it looks like IMG Academy, you know, the famed high school football school, basically, because I don't know what else they do besides play football. I think they have other good sports teams. They may have fell victim again of playing a fake high school.
Yeah. Was this the team in Canada that they played?
Yeah, they played a team called West Toronto Prep. And they beat this team 96-0 after scoring 96 first half points. In case you haven't figured it out, yes, they called the game at halftime. 96 points in the first half.
As soon as that happens, do people start asking questions?
Yeah.
Like, as soon as they called the game, they go, okay, because, now that we called the game, you guys need to come over here and we need to talk.
When you looked at the school, like, people were investigating the school, and then the school didn't have any logos on their helmet, didn't have any logos on their jersey. You go to the school website, it's very blah. You know, it's almost as if somebody just, like, bought one of those website pages that was already created for you, and you just slot in photos. You know?
What's the vetting process for this?
I have no idea.
That's my question. I asked this about the last time we had this story.
When it was Bishop Sycamore?
When it was Bishop Sycamore. And isn't there a documentary coming on about Bishop Sycamore at some point? Wasn't somebody going to do a 30 for 30 short on this or something like that? I don't know. But we asked the same question when that story happened. Where are the people that are saying, researching the opponent, really digging in, making sure it's legit, making sure they're real, making sure that's a real school, that there's real classes, that there's real teachers? Like,
yeah.
Or are they just going, we have a football team, you want? And they go, yes, we'll play you. Come on down. Like, if I'm IMG, I should have a – I probably got so much money that I can afford one guy to vet every team we're playing.
I mean, it seems like – well, I mean, you know, other teams have played this team too. Like, they pointed out that, you know, this Toronto – West Toronto team has only played teams in the United States. They don't play any – haven't played any teams in Canada. And they've scored after, what, six games this year? After six games, they have scored 6 points. And, I mean,
again,
every single game, I mean, they're just, I mean, that's, you know, 61-0, 55-0.
Because
96-0 called at the half. And I don't know if you've seen the highlights of this. Most of these points were scored because when the center was snapping it to the quarterback, who was in shotgun formation, the center was throwing it like 5 feet over his head. And,
yeah.
And Bishop, and, Bishop, IMG was just smothering it in the end zone.
Because you know what it is that when you have a center and somebody is guarding on top of the center, he has to have quick reflexes to hike the ball in that distance to the shotgun, usually, you know, down, looking, making sure mm-hmm. he's got the thing. And then he's got to quickly get up to block the guy that is ready to pounce on top of him. And if that's a massive mismatch, there's going to be a lot of jitteriness by the center, and he's going to make mistakes. That's how you cause mistakes. Now, obviously, as you get more advanced in the upper echelons of college and in the NFL, the centers are well trained. It doesn't matter who's above them. But down at this level, that's exactly what you do. And if this is such a mismatch physically, somebody should be held accountable for this.
Yeah. Somebody at IMG.
Like, seriously, my school, the school my kids have gone to here in Spring Hill, Tennessee, it's a nice school. But you can't put this school and their region and their kids up against IMG Academy. I think somebody get hurt. Somebody get really hurt. Like, you got to be careful with these schools that are like, hey, hi, can we play you? Yeah, we're a traveling school. Aha! Somebody could get hurt. These kids are, their kids are not messing around. Their kids are going to Alabama.
Yeah.
Like, this is their track.
I mean, most of these, I mean, this is their, they're hoping to be fast tracked into the NFL.
They are there for that reason. Every day they're waking up getting better at football. Right?
And doing a little bit of school on the side.
And doing school on the side. You better be careful. So, yeah, it's just amazing. We had another one of these. You think you would learn the lesson the first time, right?
Yeah.
Second time. All right. That's a good, the bad, and the dumb. Jerry Dubin's going to join us 40 past the hour. We'll continue with Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It's Wake Up Call. Surprised that the Jets beat the Bills? Or is it just one of those, you know what? It was surprising, but it isn't earth-shattering.
I guess what the part that's surprising is this something that we need to start getting used to?
Yeah. Josh Allen didn't play well. He threw two interceptions. The Jets played really good, and they won this game. But I remember a year ago, the Bills lost to Jacksonville 9-6. And at no point did I think when they were playing the Kansas City Chiefs in the playoffs, say, well, this team did lose 9-6 to Jacksonville. Like, sometimes you just lose NFL games, and I don't think it's a statement on what you are or who you are. The Bills are still a team that can blow you out by 30 points. They're still a team that can hold you to 10 points or 11 points a game.
But
This was one game where they just didn't play well.
Here's my question to you, though. Is it concerning that their losses are coming against AFC East teams?
Yeah, it is, because this is not they're not running away with it. And I will caution Buffalo and Buffalo fans is don't screw around with this. The Miami Dolphins are a good football team, really good football team. The Jets are showing that they are a good football team, that they're a tough out. And if the Jets pile up more wins, if the Bills take a stumble, and here's some teams the Bills have to play. They have to play the Jets again, but they got the Dolphins again. But they got to play the Bengals down the road. They got to play the Vikings as well. There's four games on here that, you know, hey, look, you're going up some solid opponents. If you mess around and Miami is winning some games and the Jets continue to win some games, you can find yourself in the wild card mix.
Yeah, I mean, right now.
You want the games to go through Buffalo.
I didn't know this until I just looked it up right now. They're 0-2 in their division.
Yeah. Yeah, be very, very careful. They lost to the Dolphins down in the heat down in Miami, and yep. They lost to the Jets. And again, it's, you know, look, right now we were talking about the AFC West of the preseason. We thought, oh, God, look at all these teams. This is the East now. Patriots are 5-4. They're last. Don't play around there. I mean, the Patriots defense had 9 sacks against the Colts. Offensively, I'm not 100% behind them. But you know who I am behind a lot? Miami. I'm really into Miami.
Yeah.
Miami, we talked about this at the trade deadline. Miami is a team that went, you know what? Screw it. We're in. We're all in. Here's our chips. We know that the Kansas City Chiefs are still around. We know Buffalo is still good. We know that the Titans can run the ball down people's throats. We know that Joe Burrow and the Bengals, when Jamar Chase comes back, are always going to be a threat. But you know what? We're really good, too. We've got 2 offensive weapons and a quarterback we believe in. And oh, by the way, we'll add a couple of other pieces to this pie. We'll go get Bradley Chubb and shore up our defense. We'll sign guys, too, to make it so that they're here for a while. They're cashing their chips in. Now, that game against the Bears was a back-and-forth kind of game. You know, Justin Fields is running the football, and, you know, he seems to be doing really good at that, which, let me tell you something. The number one concern I have when quarterbacks run the ball, when they become running backs, and I'm not talking scrambling. I'm not talking about, like, running around, can't find anybody. I'm talking about, like, design runs. Is how long does that last in the National Football League before you don't want your quarterback doing that anymore? Like, there is going to be a point. The problem is right now is the Bears are like driving a car with rocket fuel. And if you press the turbo boost on Kit, you'll use up the rocket fuel, but you might as well, right? And, you know, that's what they're feeling with Justin Fields. It's like, yeah, down the road, we're not going to want him to do that this much. But you know what? While we have him doing it and doing it well, we might as well let him run for 178 yards, kids. 178 yards. That's what Justin Fields had yesterday against the Dolphins. But 2 in the Dolphins, they are a strong football team. So if you're the Bills, yep, you can blow this off. And I don't blame you. You can blow this off as saying, yeah, it's a loss, and I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. You can't, unless, you know, even the Eagles are going to lose a few games this year. They're unbeaten right now and riding high, but even they're going to lose. You're going to lose in this league. The competition's too close. There's too much parity. But don't play around, because you don't want to go in the wild card round, man. You just don't. You just don't. I mean, think about this. When we talked about the playoff game last year, right? Like, a loss to Jacksonville does impact where you are going when it comes to the playoffs. So you can say, look, yes, the loss to Jacksonville last year didn't make me think less of the Bills when it came to the playoffs. By the time they got to the playoffs, the Bills got their act together. They played a perfect game against the Patriots and then moved on to Kansas City. But you win a few games like against Jacksonville, maybe you don't have to go to Kansas City. And is there, I mean, outside of Lambeau Field, where's a more daunting place to go in the playoffs than Buffalo, New York in January? Right? Where? AT&T Stadium in Dallas? Well, we've seen the Cowboys lose home playoff games. Buffalo is no joke when it comes to the playoffs in that stadium. So you're not just winning these games for your division and trying to keep leading the division. You're also making sure you try to win these games, because Kansas City is winning their games, and you don't want to be in a position where you're a wild card team having to go on the road, because crazy things happen on the road. Heck, crazy things happen when you're at home. Ask the Titans last season. Ask the Chiefs last season. But, man, it's much easier when you're home.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Visit them for a quote today at progressive.com. Jared Dubin, CBS Sports, joining us. Talk some NFL. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good. All right, so, you know, during the early part of the season, everyone was looking at Nathaniel Hackett and the Denver Broncos like, look, Nathaniel Hackett, what is he doing? What is he doing? Should we have been focusing a lot of attention on the Raiders and where Josh McDaniels is right now?
Seems like it. These last 2 weeks have been pretty bad. I don't know what they're doing with their roster more than I don't know what they're doing with their coaching situation. You know, that was a team. I know they made the playoffs last year, but it was a team that had like a 7-win point differential, and they went out and got Devontae Adams and Chandler Jones this offseason, but they tore down the offensive line. They didn't bring in much help other than that on defense. It's just like, They tried to thread this needle in a very fine way, and it does not seem to have worked out really at all.
It was tough because McDaniels wasn't going to a team that was like in shambles and rebuilding. He was trying to take a playoff team and keep the machine going, and that's almost harder to do at sometimes when you're sort of coming in, even when you add a player like Chandler Jones and Devontae Adams, because the scrutiny is higher.
Yeah, and it's like, I know they were a playoff team, but the quality of the team did not match the results last season. Like, they were, they didn't play like a playoff team throughout the year. They happened to have a really good record in close games, and that's not the type of thing that stays consistent from year to year. And if you look at it this year, their record in close games is awful. You know, you wouldn't expect it necessarily to be this bad, but that's what happens when things flip from one year to the next. You go from, you know, 10-7 despite not having a particularly good, you know, strength of performance, to now 2-6 when, you know, I'm looking at it now on Pro Football Reference, they have 3.6 expected wins, so you underperform instead of overperform,
yeah,
and all of a sudden you look like a much worse team.
Let's go to the Packers, and I guess I know quarterback, it's a two-way street sometimes. It's who you're throwing to as well, and he doesn't have Devontae Adams anymore, but his receivers have been banged up and some have been out. But how much different is Aaron Rodgers looking to you, and what is it about the way he's playing that looks so much different than what we've seen when they were putting together 13-win seasons?
Oh, yeah, I'm tired of hearing that it's just the receivers with this team. Like, no, Aaron Rodgers is not playing well at all. He, for so many years, because of, you know, the mind meld that he had with Devontae Adams and before that with guys like Jordy Nelson or Greg Jennings or Randall Cobb or whoever else, he has been able to play a style of quarterback that doesn't really make sense. And if you were like a coach watching the tape, you would tell your quarterback to never play the way that Rodgers is doing it. But because of his, you know, ridiculous accuracy and his ability to make throws from, you know, outrageous platforms and things like that, he was able to get away with it. You know, terrible footwork, terrible arm angles, not really getting himself set to throw the ball. And he was able to just put the ball in the absolute perfect place because of the chemistry that he had with those guys. And now he's trying to make those same throws, but he can't do, like, the correct footwork anymore because he spent so many years not doing it. So he winds up making these one-step slant throws to guys like Sammy Watkins, and they're not in the exact same place that Devontae Adams would be. And because he's not perfect with the footwork, it's like the throw doesn't go to the exact right spot, and it's just off. And then he's taken other throws where it's like he's trying to do trick shot stuff when he should just be throwing the ball. And, I mean, so a lot of their issue, I think, too, is so much of their play calling is RPO-type stuff because they want to be able to take advantage of what the defense does after the snap. But their receivers don't have the chemistry with Rodgers to do the RPO stuff, but Rodgers also doesn't want to hand it off often enough. So it's like, it's all compounding on itself.
Let's go to the Bears, and that was kind of a fun game back and forth with the Dolphins. But Justin Fields, look, I think he's an electric running the football, but I always get nervous when quarterbacks are running the football. 15 carries, 178 yards, but he also threw 28 times and only averaged 4 yards per completion. What is the strategy in Chicago with Justin Fields, and are they capable of opening up more of the passing game? Because eventually you're going to want him to do that too.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing about the running is that he is huge. He's like 6'3", 6'4", 220, 230. So it's not like he's going to get out there and take all these hits that are going to, you know, like pulverize him or something like that. He's very often the one delivering the blow. And, I mean, if you see that 61-yard scramble he had yesterday, yeah. He's not taking too many hits anyway because he could just outrun guys. And he's gotten pretty good with sliding to avoid hits or getting out of bounds to avoid hits as well. So I'm not quite as worried there. Obviously, you are at a little bit more of a risk when you're running that often, but I'm not necessarily super worried about that just yet. I think with the passing game, it's going to open up more as they get more guys around him. I mean, a lot of the throws this year have been to guys like Equanimeous St. Brown, Dante Pettis, things like that. They brought in Chase Claypool. They did take a couple of shots down the field in this game. They probably should have gotten a 30 or 40-yard pass interference on that last throw of the game down the left sideline. You know, Javon Holland kind of like threw Claypool down, and I don't really know what happened there, why they didn't get that call. But they're going to open things up a bit more as they get more guys in there, especially along the offensive line, when they have more confidence in them being able to protect better. Right now, a lot of what they're doing in the passing game is like half boot stuff or rollout stuff, where it's like you give Fields the option to hit a short throw or a throw over the top, and if neither one of those is open, then you trust him to make the right decision, you know, in terms of whether he's going to run it or check it down or something like that.
That's a good breakdown. That's really good. Let's go to the team they played, Miami. That we always kind of look at teams, we kind of mentally put them on tiers. Where do you put this Dolphins team? 6-3. They've got so many good players on this roster.
Yeah, I mean, they certainly look like one of the better teams in the AFC. I mean, I do think that their defense is somewhat of an issue, even after bringing in Bradley Chubb. I mean, it's not like the Bears have been the most explosive offense in the league, and they hung 32 on them in this game. Some of that is just Fields being an alien, like we just talked about.
But, yeah. You know,
and they did do a pretty good job of holding, you know, the running backs in check. Khalil Herbert and David Montgomery didn't really do much on the ground. It was basically just Fields making outrageous plays. But, you know, we've seen throughout the rest of the season that, you know, when you get Miami in a back-and-forth passing game, you can throw on them a little bit. But what they're doing offensively, I mean, I just don't know how you're able to stop them. I've been calling it like the space race offense because they just have these ridiculously fast guys. Like Tyreek Hill is not the only fast guy on the team, obviously. Jaylen Waddle is arguably just as fast as Tyreek Hill. Even got like Cedric Wilson's like the slowest guy on their offense, and he ran like a 4.45 coming out of Boise State back in the day. Raheem Mostert has really good speed. Jeff Wilson, like they just get all of these fast guys in open space and dare you to figure out how to cover them.
All right, let's go to the Seahawks. What's in the secret sauce in Seattle? What is happening there? 6-3, and really can't blame the media. I know players love to go, nobody believed in us, and they're haters. I think there was a legitimate analysis of this team that was, you know, pretty predictable given their circumstances, and now it's 6-3. What's in the secret sauce?
Geno Smith.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's just playing at an incredibly high level. Like, it's not like he's just being schemed into stuff and taking advantage of what's there for him. He's making, like, outrageous throws every week, back-to-back. Kenneth Walker looks incredible. And I think a big part of it, too, is their offensive line has just been so much better than anybody could have reasonably expected. The two rookie tackles that they drafted, Charles Cross and Abe Lucas, are playing, you know, pretty well for a pair of, you know, rookie bookend tackles on that offensive line. And, you know, they're getting strong push. They're doing, honestly, a lot of the things that people begged Pete Carroll to do in terms of, like, play action on early downs and not just going, like, run pass on every single drive. They're being more aggressive in fourth down situations and things like that. And they're doing it with Geno Smith when they wouldn't do it with Russell Wilson for years. And, you know, it's all working for them. And it's not just those things, but those things are certainly helping.
Is it time to start looking at the Minnesota Vikings as a serious contender in the AFC? We always hesitant with Minnesota, at least I am, but now it's 7-1. Is that time now to look at them differently?
I don't know what to make of that team. I honestly,
yeah, I'm with you, man.
I feel like they haven't been overly impressive in really all that many of their games. And I mean, you look at it, with the exception of the game against the Packers in week one, every single game has been a one-score win. Right. How sustainable is that? Like, if they were 5-3 instead of 7-1, would we be talking about them as a contender in the NFC? I don't really think so. You know, they are 7-1. They get to keep those seven wins. But also, you wouldn't expect them to win every one-score game going forward. So it's like I find it kind of hard to balance.
I look at them and I see a team that's good. But I don't see them I'm not seeing greatness. I'm seeing good. Like, statistically, they look pretty good. But I don't see, like, a Bills team that pops out with 30 points a game or something.
Right. Like, the thing is, nobody in the league is great right now. Like,
that is a great point. That is a great point. You're 100% right. There really isn't a team that you would go there. Even the Eagles, you feel like they're not head and shoulders above everybody else. They're just piling up.
They certainly are. It's not like all of their wins have been close games. They just, like, completely dominate teams in the first half, and then in the second half, it's like, all right, we can go on cruise control a little bit. That's basically what it's been throughout the entire season. But they're not going to get challenged all that often the rest of the way. I'm pretty sure they're going to race to that number one seed. Like, it would take them slipping up against Dallas and against a team that Dallas has already beaten, plus Dallas not slipping up the rest of the way themselves, for the Eagles to lose that number one seed at this point.
Jared Dubin, CBS Sports. Always good talking to you, my friend. Thanks you for joining us on a busy Monday. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Have a good day.
You got it. As we talk some NFL. I love it. I'm like, he's like us. Like, this is a guy that gets inside all this, gets inside the numbers, and he doesn't know what to make of the Vikings either. I'm with him. It feels like he's right. Every game, they beat the Packers pretty handedly in that week one. And at the time, remember, we said, oh, well, the Packers, they lost to the Saints last year in their first game, and look what they did. They went, Packers went nowhere. The Vikings, they lose the next week to the Eagles. Okay, yeah, it's Minnesota. And then they rip off six straight wins, all by one score. Some of the wins were against teams that aren't that great, like the Lions, Commanders, Saints aren't that good, Bears are all right. They did beat the Dolphins, but I don't know what to make of them either. I really don't. It's really bizarre. And here's the thing. They might be the number one seed in the NFC. I mean, if the Eagles lose, they're only a game behind Philadelphia for the best record in the conference. I mean, could the playoffs run through Minnesota? I don't know. They could easily, you know, be not the team that does that. Who knows? But right now they're playing good. They're playing good enough to win these games by one score. And Kirk Cousins went home to Washington and all that. So thanks, Jared Dubin, joining us here on Wake Up Calls. We continue.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Steve Gardner is going to join us next hour. We will talk to him about the Astros winning the World Series baseball in general. And we are approaching heavy weather season. It did get me thinking driving should be enjoyable, even when it's raining. But you know what's the worst situation? You're having a good moment listening to this show on the radio, for example. Ron giving the good, the bad, and the dumb, or maybe your favorite song. And then suddenly it's ruined because your wipers are going, it's embarrassing and dangerous. That's when you know you need new wipers. Don't let squeaky wipers ruin your great moments. Hear clearly those great moments by Michelin Wipers. Michelin is always reminding drivers how important it is to regularly check their wipers for safety on the road, and they've even made it an official holiday. The International Check Your Wipers Day. It's coming up November 16th. So don't forget, check your wipers. It's simple to update your wipers to Michelin. Pick them up today at Walmart. That is pretty awesome. Can you just make up a holiday? Can you just do that? Can you just say...
Yeah, I made one up the other day.
October 5th is going to be Tony D and Ron Culver Day. Is that
Well, that should be July 6th.
8th or 8th or 7th. 8th, whenever we launched this bad boy in 2018.
That should be a holiday.
Right.
That America should observe.
People should have the day off, enjoy picnics with your family on the day off for Tony and Ron Day. There you go. Jared Dubin is 100% correct. There really isn't, even the Eagles, this is the good thing about the league. Is that you can't be blown away when teams don't play well, particularly week it happens. But when you look at maybe the Eagles, I feel like the Eagles have a combination of good in their defense and offense. They run the ball great, they throw well, they've got great players on both sides of the ball. But let's take a look at the Vikings team that's got one loss. Like he said, nothing really stands out like with the Vikings. It's not like they're in the top five in passing, or they're in the top five in rushing, or their defense is in the top five in points allowed, or something along those lines. They are 10, 13, middle of the road in some categories, yet they're winning these games. Now, granted, they are beating the Lions, the Saints, the Commanders, Arizona that is beatable. Miami was a good win for them. Packers right now, we're finding out, aren't that good of a football team. So maybe they're just benefiting from the competition not being as strong. I don't know. But they're 7-1, and I'm ignoring them most of the time. I don't look at it as I look at the Buffalo Bills, let's say. When I look at the Bills or the Chiefs or in the AFC or even the Titans, I'm like, where are they going? Who are they playing? It's a big game. Have the Vikings been on primetime this year? Because if I did I miss it? Or did I watch it and totally forget about it? Because both are actually quite acceptable. That I could have seen them on primetime and totally forgot about it, or I haven't seen them on primetime yet. I don't know. Now, none of their opponents look like they would be on primetime. No, they did have a Monday night game against the Eagles. But that was a blowout. That was a 24-7 game. But other than that, I don't see enough of this team on a regular basis. And yet, 7-1 should have my attention. Why doesn't it? I don't know. Why am I watching the Eagles in perfection? Why am I watching the Seahawks to see if they can land more wins? Why am I watching the Cowboys and the Giants to see who could be second place? And why am I watching if Tom Brady and the Buccaneers can turn it around in that conference? Why am I not paying much attention to the Minnesota Vikings, a team I should be at 7-1? Is it because they're winning by one score, close games? I don't know. It's a question.